Welcome, welcome, welcome to this seventh gate root chakra class. As we get closer and closer to the underworld with the Libra Meta Goddess, so at this gate we get to release whatever prevents us from being grounded and rooted to the earth and our bodies. We are at the very near the end of our descent. We have one more class that will happen in the end of June for the eighth gate that happens on July 1st, and then Venus will drop into the underworld on July 8th. So we're focusing on, in this class, on the next level of descent as we continue to prepare our process of death and rebirth, dying to who we think we are so we can be reborn to who we really are. So wherever you are now is exactly where you're meant to be. There's no right or wrong. We always have to remind you of that because, you know, I need that reminder. There's no better or worse. There's no success or failure. It's all about surrender and allowing this process to work you deeply, even if that feels messy. One way or the other, this descent journey will transform you. Pretty much guaranteed. I know it's been working on me. And so you may find that you're letting go or practicing letting go. So sometimes we can't always figure out how to let it go. We can't make it be different. We can't control the outcome. So the main thing we can do is to remember to just surrender, let it go. Because when we really do that, it helps us with experiencing this empowered and embodied transformation that's intended. That's why we're here. That's what we're doing. So remember that listening to the classes or the recordings or the videos or the meditations, all part of a potent ceremonial space that's working for you regardless of whether you do or don't do any of these things during these gates. So no pressure, no shame, no blame. It's whatever it is for you, it's perfect. And this root chakra descent time is really about releasing whatever is in the way of accepting what is, and trusting your process. I had a friend say to me one time, accept what is and trust the universe. And I like that as a mantra, accept what is and trust the universe. Trusting the journey, trusting yourself, trusting the universe. So I'm in my Venus return. So this has been very this gate has been very personal to me. And I'm also in a Mars return, so the age 64 Venus-Mars return. And this sacral chakra, I was really noticing all the wounding I've had around men and money. And there's, you know, a few other things that go with that, but primarily that piece. And it's been up and in my face. And how men may have treated me in the past, going all the way back to my father. So I've been really being able to work this deeply and had a huge major breakthrough just in the last few days. So I'm really excited about that. So now the other thing, too, is I had a lot of support from Peter, my BAG, best husband ever. He's helped me see the bigger picture and, you know, work with this and helping me get a better, bigger point of view, and also not to necessarily be in the place of shaming and blaming myself, which is one of the places I wanted to go with all of this. So miraculously, there was a shift and an apology that came out of nowhere. So this stuff works. I'm just saying, totally amazing. It's like, wow. And surrendering to what is, willingness to embrace the process, letting go, including being willing to forgive and move on. These are all powerful, powerful tools to utilize at these lower chakra gates. And we're, you know, in a sense, really clearing out the dross of what has been, even if you've done this many times before, because I have, I'm definitely seeing results of that much more quickly than any other time. And so that's my story, and I have a feeling Tammy has something to share about this as well.
Yes, and I just so appreciate, Kaylin, every time you just appreciate that you just speak to wherever we're at is good, and I want to write that. Could you say that again, what you said about life is about accepting, and how do you say that again?
Oh, accept what is and trust the universe.
Yeah, I love that. That's so deceptively simple. Yeah, just do that. No big deal.
Right.
Oh, man.
Sometimes easier than others.
I know, right? But it's so true. Ooh, yeah, well, we're in my neck of the woods right now, literally. I live very close to the Missouri River, and we have had tornadoes, like, right and left, and I feel very lucky because, you know, I've been in the basement last week at a time when there was a town not too far from us that really was devastated. So a lot, the earth is speaking, the rivers are rising, people are really being affected by this. So just I've been sending lots of prayers around that. This is not to do with the sacral chakra gate specifically, but I just have to say, we know that part of what we're doing together, considering we're gathered by the circle of the grandmothers, that's really how we initiated this, and in service to the divine feminine, that a part of this journey, and that it has so much to do with honoring all our relations, you know, to connect with, to be in deeper relationship with life, that I think it's, I just want to speak to the way that I feel the closer we get to the underworld Venus period, I think many of us are feeling the rawness of what's happening all around us, you know, and in my case, it's, you know, climate change, seeing all those images of youth who have been protesting and trying to raise visibility for it and then just feeling it very visibly here in this area, this region, you know, it's big. It's so present. And, you know, how to walk that fine line between looking at it honestly and also acknowledging the layers and the levels at which this earth is continues to be so potent and powerful, and just like we in our own bodies, is she knows how to heal herself. So honoring that. But I'll just say that I think that between the tornadoes and also this is related to the sacral chakra gate. I'm living in Missouri at the moment, and which is where I'm from. And this we happen to be a state that now where now all abortion is illegal. And so you know this is it's a really grave moment in our history, and so. You know, this is something for us as women, as advocates for the sacred feminine to, you know, to really, I know many of us in this circle, I'm sure, have been really feeling the reverberations of that. And it feels really important to also, from my perspective, like, to think about South Node, Pluto, and Saturn and Capricorn at the same time, that everything we're experiencing, these rumblings in some way, are like these kind of time melds where we're feeling also what our own ancestors experienced in the past. And so, you know, just collectively, just sending out again a prayer and just knowing that we collectively can bring healing to what's happening for women, and that we collectively can bring our attention to this with love and with consciousness, and we can speak up in the ways that we have influence. And that's the big thing, I think, not just personally, but collectively, that I see that resonates with the sacral chakra gate. And for myself, I'm just going to share my story briefly around abortion, because I think many women have been doing that now, and it's really very important. And for me, I could have gotten pregnant, but I have never been pregnant in my life. And that's by some strange, I don't even know how that's even possible, because I know there were a couple times where I could have and I didn't. But I had two beloveds, one family member and a friend who I was with. And I held their hand when they were in Planned Parenthood and as they prepared to make that decision. And one was in her early teens. And, you know, I figured it out. She was vomiting. She was really sick. And I asked her, and, you know, she ended up really sharing with me, because she told me, you know, that other family members, some would have been really, really very much focused on her needing to make the decision to have an abortion, and other family members would have been very much on the other side, being very evangelical, and I was a safe space for her. And I think, you know, it's, I think with these issues that are so deeply polarizing, and they're used against us in that way to be polarizing, that it's really important for us to create, on the one hand, to allow the righteous anger and boundary of the sacred feminine to flow through us, and at the same time to channel that with love to create a space for people to really have conversation about what this is about for us as women. So in any case, that's the other woman, the other friend was, she had actually, she had been raped and she had given birth to the child. She had adopted the child out when she was about 13. And so for her, you know, she had gone through that devastating experience as a very young person, and somehow she had managed to come to some form of healing, and she'd gotten pregnant again, and she, you know, so I was with her in this abortion. But both women now have beautiful children, and Ursula Le Guin has written something recently about her own experience and around that, and the fact that she has children now, and she would not, that she chose, and that she would not have had those children, most likely, had she have chosen to, not chosen to abort. So just putting that out there, because that's, you know, it's a very real thing right now that is, there's the level of things, you know, the deeper level of this is reminding us of what's happened in the past, and there's also what's current in the middle world that needs to be addressed and brought to our attention, and we need to find, you know, to find the ways that we can shift that, and then there's the level of spirit, which, you know, we can be learning from this about. Well, I don't even know. I can't even look at it from that realm right now, honestly. But in any case, yeah, we're living in some really raw times. So just compassion in all directions.
Yeah, beautiful. And, you know, it is about the womb, right? So that's the sacral chakra area. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so very, very interesting that it was happening on the descent. And perhaps we could hold the vision that it is about clearing the dross around all of that, too. Yeah. So that's awesome,
yeah.
Tammy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think we're ready now to begin bringing in our sacred space. And so I just invite everyone to allow your attention to come to your breath and to breathe in to your into your belly, and then also just imagine, as you're doing that the breath is entering the top of your head and it's moving down the front of your body into your root chakra. And then from the root chakra, breathe out and bring that energy back up the spine and out the top of your head and kind of create the circular breath of where you're breathing down into your belly and out through the spine and out the top of the head and then back down into the belly. So keeping that circular breath going as best you can, while allowing your awareness to really include a sense of immense gratitude for the sacred safe container that we're all creating together. Such a good job. I love it. Within the sacred space of our shared journey and with the gratitude of the circle of grandmothers and our personal grandmother guides, who are always, always, always supporting our journey, and inviting all your helping spirits, power animals, allies, beings of light to continue supporting you in your journey with their wisdom, guidance, and insights. So with that, let's do the relational goddess prayer. Beloved goddess of the scarlet garment, great one of healing, lady of personal transformation, goddess of great vitality, strength, and life force energy, guide me to release everything that prevents me from trusting I am safe and secure, I am loved, I am supported, I am accepted, I am significant, and I am valued for who I am and not just what I do. Ancient wise one, remover of all obstacles and self-created barriers, guide me to release whatever is in the way of experiencing radiant, vibrant, alive life force energy. Guide me in releasing everything that prevents me from creating and maintaining healthy relational boundaries. Guide me in discovering all the false beliefs and misconceptions that block me from knowing my great value and evolving life purpose. Help me release all root chakra imbalances and distortions, including whatever prevents me from living the immense power, magic, and wonder of my personal life force. So I restore the cosmic balance within myself and the rest of the world. It is done. It is so. We are grateful for the sacred space activated now and each time the recording is listened to. Blessed be.
I think they just keep getting better, Kaylin.
Thank you.
So tonight we are going to, again, talk about sky magic, and there's a lot. It's pretty potent and powerful, kind of amazing, as always. And then we're going to talk about just how it might feel and what we can work with Venus moving through Taurus and Gemini right now at the root chakra gate, and what some of the blocks might be that we might encounter, and some questions that might help to really navigate this journey, and home play, and the Venus symbol journey and the sky symbol journey, and then maybe, perhaps, hopefully, we'll have more time tonight for Q&A. We can always hope. So so I do also want to just say briefly that I've noticed for myself in these chakra gates that, you know, even when Kaylin and I give these classes, there usually are a few more days before we complete the next or the last chakra gate. So I just, for some reason, it feels important in this moment just to say, if you have not completed the sacral chakra gate, if you don't feel like you've fully reflected on what's happened then, I just always recommend just a few days before the gate or even the day before the gate shifts, just get your Venus journal out and just reflect what's happened over the last month and really maybe go through those questions or one of the questions if you haven't. And you would be amazed by what you can kind of constellate in 20 minutes. It's very, very potent and powerful and so worth it. And, you know, you can do it in your journal. You can also write in the Facebook group. It's really obvious to me, and I know that this is true for myself as well, that those women who are sharing their stories related to the themes of the Venus chakra gates in Facebook are getting so much out of it because they're consciously choosing to not only become aware of their process internally, but they're sharing it with the circle. And so that's just a whole other level of integration. So just encouraging, if you haven't yet, to really make use of this potent community of women and the opportunity to really deepen into each of
them. And men. We've got a couple men.
And men and Jeffrey. Yes. So awesome.
Jeffrey and Kent. We have
and Kent,
too.
That's right. So cool. Men. We have two men. Hooray
yes.
for you. We're
right?
so glad you're here. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you for saying that, Tammy, because it's I think what everything you're saying is so true. And basically that it's that idea you get out of something what you get put into it. But it also, when we share our personal piece with others, it can be so helpful in ways we don't even necessarily know. So it's a great way to support one another. Yeah,
thank you. And
awesome.
You know, I think one other thing too, this might sound funny, but I think another reason to share, and this could be taken the wrong way, but I think part of it is that then you are actually always looking for those symbols and those instances and those experiences. You're actually looking to make the pattern to see the connection because you know you're going to share that.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
I absolutely agree with that. Yep. Having written celestial timings for 23 years now, and
right.
having writing and trying to put the pattern together and the pieces together to share, it taught me so much about myself, about the mm-hmm. everything. So it's a powerful, potent process. Yeah,
yep.
definitely. All right, so we're gonna look at the next slide, number 5, showing where the Moon, Venus are at the day before the exact gate. Because I think the exact gate is on June 1st, and so we're looking at the day before, and as the Moon will be more above Venus, and the Venus is just above the Pleiades, Not quite there yet, but we'll definitely be there this month, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more. So the moon in the early morning around 3 degrees Taurus, very close to Uranus, catching up to Venus. That's at 19 degrees Taurus by the next day. So if you look at the next slide, Venus has moved to 20, almost 21 Taurus. And in the early morning, the moon will be at 16, so they're pretty close together. Now, for those of you on daylight savings time, you really definitely need to get up earlier to see this in the morning sky. Luckily here in Arizona, we're not on daylight time, so we have dark skies a little bit longer in the morning because we haven't been messing with the clock. But anyway, this is really, and interestingly, on the day of the exact conjunction, the sun is at 10 degrees, almost 11 degrees Gemini, and it's so it's very close to the star Aldebaran. Now, of course, it's not visible because it's with the sun, but that particular star we'll talk a little bit more about along with the Pleiades around why that's so significant. So just something to notice. And then also Mars at almost 11 Cancer is catching up to Sirius, to be in zodiacal alignment with Sirius. I think Sirius is around 14 degrees. So basically Mars and the North Node are going to be hanging out close there as well. So those are just, we're not going to go into detail because we're not focused on Mars at this time, but I just wanted to mention that. And Sirius is one of the magical stars that we can tune into. So, it's around, well, the United States Declaration of Independence was signed when the sun was with Sirius. That's how important it was. So that, yeah.
Yes, we so big. Well, and it's right? The new moon, right? It's right? Like the new moon is with Sirius. It's with Aldebaran.
right, exactly. So, and then we have June 2nd, and the moon may not be visible because Venus is so low on the horizon and depends. I mean, to really get the moon above the horizon, I had to go to 5:15 a.m. It's, local time. And that also depends on your horizon line. So we have a big mountain in our more eastern view from where I am. So I don't know. I'm thinking I might not see it. So some of you might, some of you might not. If you look at slide number 8, we've got the Pleiades, and when Venus on June 8th aligns with the Pleiades, and so maybe visible, but again, you'd probably have to get up a little earlier to be able to see that before the sky brightens too much, because the Pleiades will disappear really fast. Venus will be visible, but you might not see them because of the light in the sky that's already happening around that time of day. So what we want to do is just really tune into the Pleiades and the Hyades and Aldebaran, because Venus will be there, even though we may not see them so easily this time of year because the sun is so close to being there. But Aldebaran is a royal star. It marks the eye of the bull. So I always think it has to do with perception, how we see things, and so on. So, and the Hyades are the five daughters of Atlas and the sisters of the Pleiades. And so, and it makes a beautiful V in the sky. It's really fun to see if you're able to see it. And this time of year, you probably won't be able to see it. So it's unfortunate, but we have the star map so we can tune in that way. And then, of course, the Pleiades have been important all over the planet. There are descriptions of these stars that date back more than 40,000 years. Some believe that it's the cosmic star mother who gave her children the codes of light. Some look at the Pleiades as the flock of doves. Some feel like it's connected to Mary Magdalene and the Merovingian bloodline. Many Native American tribes, really all over the world, there have been cultures that have connected to it. Many cultures, the Mayans, of course, we just had the Sun-Pleiades conjunction that was exact around May 21st, and that happens to be at a zenith point down by Chichen Itza. And we talked about that last time. So it's very, very significant, and was part of what they were doing to track the 26,000-year cycle. The Mayans were tracking when the sun and the Pleiades were together at a zenith point. Can only happen for a time period, 72 to 144 years, every 26,000 years. So it's quite remarkable, and to have Venus here now at this time at the root chakra gate feels significant. Anything you want to add, Tammy?
Oh, yeah, no, it's just so powerful. One thing, Kaylin, and I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like your volume isn't as high as it is sometimes.
I'm on my phone because my Skype wouldn't start up. So
Well, that explains it. Okay. all right, just checking on that. But so that makes perfect sense. So, I think one of the things that strikes me about it is that in addition to all of the different ancient cultures who have seen the Pleiades as their original home, or see the significance in terms of turning of an age or many other things, there's also what I've seen when I've done research as well, is just that there are so many cultures across the globe who do see it as an actual group of women or a group of sisters. And so in addition to all the other meanings, I really often do feel that in a simplistic way, but a very potent way, the Pleiades, when they're activated, they truly do call for us to remember the power of circles of women gathering, like our circle. And that there's something so potent about that. And especially with the Libra gate, right? I mean, the Libra cycle, right? That these circles of sisters coming together to affect change, to do deep prayer, to be dedicated to our own healing and to the healing of the planet around us. You know, it can't be underestimated just how powerful that is. So, I think it's something to also just deepen into and acknowledge and honor with the activation.
Yes, beautiful. You know, whenever two or more are gathered, right? And as
right.
we exponentially increase the power of the gathering by each person that's a part of it. So, yeah.
Right.
Now, what's interesting to me, and if you look at slide number 10, because somebody was asking me, you know, I know that several of the stars of the Pleiades have been at zero. Gemini went in some time ago, and we can look back to 1972 and 1974, and we see, and interestingly, one of the stars is named Atlas, not feminine.
Yeah.
Even though they're called the Seven Sisters, and I think even the Greeks called them the Seven Sisters, but for some reason they named one of them Atlas. Don't ask me why. Hmm. Anyway, it's just an interesting perspective. And went into Gemini in 1974, and then Alcyone, the one that is considered the main star of the Pleiades, entered in 2000. Into Gemini, interestingly, on September 17th, 2000. And then the rest, we just had one. And I actually created the slide before our class because now I could say it's at 0000 Gemini instead of 2959 Taurus, because on May 24th, 2019, Astrope went into Gemini. So now we have four of the stars, of the seven stars in Gemini, and then three more that will be going in, one in 2022, the star Maya, and then the others in 2040 and 2041. So eventually we'll get to where they're all in Gemini. So currently they're kind of straddling the Taurus Gemini archetypes, if that makes sense, like kind of both. So, which is an interesting to contemplate. I've written a lot about it in the past. I don't remember all the details of what I wrote, but I had super big insights about it at one time. And I just tuning in this very moment, it's just like there's that very grounded, earthy, pleasure-filled energy of Taurus, and then the aspect of the mind and creative expression and having fun and play of the Gemini archetype. So so really the Pleiades is having both of those influences at this time.
Yeah. Embodied mind, too. How do we bring the brilliance of our consciousness into the physical body?
Exactly. It's such a good question to be with, especially at the root chakra.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So yeah. Slide number 11 is just, I wanted to bring this in because it's just another view of seeing the moon and Venus together on June 1st. And above it, it says the Aryatids. This actually comes from my Starwalk app. And the Aryatids is the meteor shower that's connected to the constellation that is called Aries, but is actually overlaid by the seasonal sign of Taurus currently. However, on June 7th is the peak of the Aryatids meteor shower. So you might get a chance to see that. In the morning sky, if you're up early. So just something to note there. And then we will have on the slide number 12, we will have the June solstice on June 21st. It'll be exact. And something that all of you may want to do is sign up for the free solstice class that the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School is offering. And it's free, and we'll make sure you get the link if you want to go sign up for that. So you'll get all the information and so on if you do that. Then we have slide number 13, and it has the dates of the things that we most want to look at. Of course, this root chakra gate is at 21 Taurus, not that far from the Pleiades. Venus will definitely be visible near them if you can see them when you get up, if Venus rises and early enough for that to be seen. I don't know if it will or not. And then Venus is with the Pleiades on June 7, 8, 9. That happens to also coincide with the Aryatid meteor shower. Kind of cool. And then Venus will be with Aldebaran June 16, 17, and 18, the closest on the 17th. And then the summer solstice will be on June 21st, and we're doing the class on June 22nd, so hope many of you can join us for that. And then Venus will be opposite Jupiter June 23rd and square Neptune on June 24th, and then the next Venus Moon Gate will be on July 1st, and we'll have our next class before that. Right?
Awesome. Yeah, I love that June Venus is squaring, of course, because Venus is getting closer to the sun. As well, there's all this activation going on, and Jupiter. Jupiter is going to be squaring Neptune in late June also. It's one of the big events of the year, and then the Sun, of course, will be squaring Neptune. So it's powerful that Venus is also activating this, and also Mars will be. So
Yeah.
So, wow.
Cool.
Yeah, there's so much there. And I love also that with the Aryatid meteor showers, it's easy to miss the Aries constellation in the sky. It's hard to see it sometimes. So that could also be a time for anybody who has strong Aries in their chart. Or not, well, I guess that's not right.
That's the problem.
anybody who has these degrees where the constellation is currently located, which is right, like in Taurus, could tune in to where the constellation is, even if it's not in your chart. It's fun to see where it is. So,
right, and it was when the spring equinox was in that constellation that we had the patriarchy come in. So, so maybe we can send some prayers.
We can really spend some time with these constellations, and also, tune into this is going to sound like a weird question, but what is the higher vibrational energy of this last, 2,000 plus years? What is the gift? What is the gold in it? What is it about it? What is it that we've been learning collectively as humanity that's actually healing?
Yes. I love that.
Hard to see it right now, that's for sure.
Yes.
Just offering it as a question. So then over the course of this next month together, then Libra, the Libra meta goddess Venus in her current current manifestation is moving through the sign of Taurus at the root chakra for the first few days, the first week of this activation. So, that's pretty beautiful if you think about how traditionally both Libra and Taurus were seen as being the signs that we had the deepest connection to Venus. Now, we don't really necessarily subscribe to that, but there is something about the love goddess that gets really, really deeply activated when you have these two energies together. So, you know, it's really a time for us to encounter and heal and clear whatever stands in the way of our full expression of the love goddess within ourselves, the innate beauty, beauty beyond, you know, the physical appearance, beauty in the soul at the essence level, and the essence of feminine love. You know, these things are being really activated for us, and so we can encounter the places where we might feel wounding around that, the vulnerability of the Libra-Taurus kind of connection, and we might also be invited to let go of whatever stands in the way of a full connection to that. So in Taurus, this goddess is releasing all that stands in the way of a fully embodied, pleasure-filled sense of belonging on Earth and in community. And we might encounter, so as to release, any feelings of shame associated with our Aphrodite nature or our natural sensuality and sexuality due to judgment from the culture we were raised in. You know, I know for myself, I can remember so clearly, and this may be very true depending on the nature of your own culture, but growing up in rural Missouri, it was so clear that there was this division between the women or the girls who were seen as too sexual and the girls who were actually often much more promiscuous, but they were seen in a better light because, you know, for various reasons. And so there's, regardless, there was so much judgment around women on one end or the other because of their sensuality and sexuality. And there's so much wounding that happens when we're younger around that. So it's not only what's happened to us over the course of our lives in relation to our own sensuality and our beauty and our sexuality and the ways that those things, we've been made to feel ashamed of that, but it's also, again, our ancestors, the women, the grandmothers, the mothers who live inside of us, and it, just tuning in and saying, well, what would it take to release, heal, clear any vibrations, any energetic that remains around shame of our physical bodies, of our physical, just our the beauty that permeates our being in our goddess essence, and also that we are sensual, we are beautiful beings. You know, even if we don't feel that we our appearance is, you know, it's not, we don't fit, you know, what the cultural standards are of beauty, as narrow and as kind of flat as they are. So to just really encounter and release whatever stands in the way of us claiming our own full experience of love and of beauty in the way that we are that essence. And so we now claim our right to be honored and respected in our communities and our relationships as both passionate lovers and cherished partners. Because also to consider that for many of us, we also have experienced or our ancestors experienced that virgin whore kind of dichotomy where you could either be, you know, taken care of or loved as wife and property, wife and partner, or you could be a lover who got to experience, you know, maybe more of the good stuff around sexuality and sensuality, but you certainly couldn't have both. So, you know, where does that division live inside of you, and how can that be healed? You have anything to say about that, Kayla?
How can we heal the, how do I want to say this? You know, something that was like the worst thing you could be called, whether it was true or not, it was the worst thing you could be called. When I was growing up anyway, it was a slut.
Me too.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you feel how that feels in my belly when you say the word. When I say the word, it's just like, you know, it's like the book Cunt that came out. We need to reclaim some of these words. So that when we hear them, we feel like empowered.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, awesome. So then the Libra Meta Goddess moves into the sign of Gemini at the root chakra. And so, you know, it makes me think about how, and actually for most of the month, that's the dynamic, that's the kind of synthesis of energies that we are working with. And so, you know, for me, it really invokes, I love this image because I just think about the way that when we are very small, we create community, we connect with each other in such an innocent, kind of playful way, hopefully, usually, kids can be actually quite cruel if they are neglected or if they're harmed when they're little. But you know, when we're really, when children are healthy, when they come together and they can just, you know, they bond through play. It's not all about the mind. It's not all about comparisons. It's just, you know, just let's play. Let's have fun. And so this month, really, for a lot of it, it's like just about clearing any and all blocks around letting our joyful inner child enjoy spontaneous fun and play with her tribe of magic makers and her beloved. So she's releasing any and all inhibitions around showing up in her relationships as her most authentic, joyful, mischievous, wild, and free self, finding her people and having fun. And I like the mischievousness piece also. I think that's really important. So awaken your inner prankster and have fun with your friends this month.
So I just have to tell a really quick story that, you know, having when I got to the point where I was connecting with Peter, and he asked me early on, like, you know, very early on in our relationship, what is the most important thing to you in relationship? And he was expecting me to say commitment, loyalty, honesty, trust, you know, those typical answers. And I just said, fun, fun, fun. he's got a lot of Gemini, so he stopped dead in his tracks, and he looked at me, and he's like, oh, my God, that's brilliant. So that's the basis of our relationship, and really is a great basis for a relationship. I have to tell you, it just gets better all the time. We have more fun all the time. It's a great intent. So I just love this, that it is about having fun. It is about how do we relate to one another in ways that are more playful and fun. It is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hallelujah. I love that.
Yeah. So if you look at slide number 16, I had the opportunity to see this Call to Courage with Brené Brown on Netflix, and it is so good. So if you have a chance to see it, I highly recommend it, because a lot of the things we're going to share from here, I actually took notes because I was so inspired. And, you know, she's written all these number one bestsellers, and she, in the documentary or the film, she talks about when she gave her TED Talk, and that she had just told her husband she was going to do something different and talk about, you know, she was going to be vulnerable. And then afterwards, she just had a meltdown. She was like, well, first she thought it was only going to be the 500 people that were at her talk. And then they posted it on YouTube. And then she, you know, she had over 35 million views, but she started watching all of the negative comments, and she went into a meltdown. And so I'll share a little bit more about what she decided around that as we go into the next slide. But she talks a lot about the importance of being vulnerable and how belonging is not the same as fitting in. So vulnerability and trust are the keys to wholehearted living and belonging. This is so interesting to me, because I've been involved in this priestess circle in Cave Creek over the last year, and one of the women in the circle she was like not being vulnerable, and she saw it as a weakness. And this is very typical of how so many people see vulnerability. And so it really brought my attention to the whole thing about being vulnerable and how that takes courage. It takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable, and it doesn't take that much courage to be not vulnerable, the opposite of vulnerable, whatever that might be. Anyway, so she says you start with either or both as they build on one another, and that if you're in that place of vulnerability, there's a certain amount of uncertainty, there's risk, you have emotional exposure, it's not about winning or losing, but having the courage to show up when you can't control the outcome. And so I just love this. I was like, ooh, where do I feel like I want to control the outcome? And where might I not show up because I feel like I can't, or where might I not show up because, or where would I be showing up, but trying to control the outcome, so not really being vulnerable. So these are just questions that I've been tuning into.
Uncomfortable questions.
Right? And that's what she says. To be vulnerable is to be uncomfortable.
Yep.
Right? So, yeah. So anyway, and then she talks about all the research. She's been involved with all this research, and that the researchers now measure how brave you are by how vulnerable you are willing to be. And so to be brave is to be vulnerable. And that, and then she talks about don't take criticism from people who are not being brave with their lives. So this is where, when she was doing the, looking at the comments people were making about her, you know, she needed to lose weight and she didn't, blah, blah, and, you know, all the different criticisms that were coming through that she was taking on. She was like, finally someone said, or she came across a quote, I think it was, that maybe was from Teddy Roosevelt, that you don't take criticism from people who are not really in the game, who are not really willing to be brave with their lives, because they're not out there being vulnerable. So I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
It's such a good thing to keep in mind when we're at the root chakra, like, okay. Right? Because sometimes we feel like we're not belonging, we're not fitting in, or, you know, whatever, if people are being critical. But sometimes those people are just being critical because they're like, you know, the armchair quarterback saying, well, they should have done it this way, or they could have been doing it that way, or whatever that's about. And it's not, they're not really in the game. They're not, right. They're not having to be in that moment. So, yeah. Anyway, so she says that fitting in, and this is on slide number 18, is assessing and acclimating to fit in, like what to wear, how to appear, what to say, conforming in some way. So, you know, this is, I have noticed that sometimes I do these things. Like, you know, especially when I was a kid, I wanted to fit in. Not as much anymore. I'm like, I do a lot of things a lot of people don't do, and I wear a lot of things a lot of people wouldn't wear, but whatever, you know. But anyway, so there can be situations where fitting in might be useful, like if you're in a school situation or a work situation or certain social situations. But the thing that I was tuning into around this is like, well, if you're saying things that are gossipy and that are untrue for us, creating the possibility that it might feel like if you're gossiping, it might feel that, you know, might feel guilty about that. So you don't want to fit in that way. You don't want to, like, you know, conform to that degree. So that fitting in then can become the greatest barrier to belonging. So true belonging doesn't require you to change who you are. It requires you to be who you are, both vulnerable and brave. I love that. I just love that. So how do you work on your belonging? First, you need to connect with what interests you and hang out with those people who share your interests, because then you get to be more of who you are. If you're trying to hang out with people who are nothing like you and, you know, or maybe critical or whatever that's about, then that's probably not going to be helpful. And then what brings you joy, and finding time to do those things.
Yep.
So the fitting in versus belonging list all of the things you do to fit in that feel bad, unfulfilling, and that are less than who you really are. So if you think about it, if you take some time to work on this, because really at the root chakra, it is about practicing belonging. We want to belong. We desire that. We yearn for that. It is what our deepest soul wants, is to feel that sense of belonging. But if we're doing the fitting in piece, then we're not belonging. We're just fitting in, and then that's only a temporary fix, right? So,
yeah.
Who would you look like, sound like, be like if you weren't fitting in? Good question to tune into. And what action could you take to let at least one of these fitting in things go, or change it somehow? So that's another good question to be with. And how would your life be, what would your days look like, and who would you be spending time with if you weren't fitting in, if you were practicing belonging, and having the courage to do that. And, you know, I'm sure that people that are in this class probably already have that, have the courage to do that to some degree. But I just know from when I look at this, there's always more I can do in that regard. And so something I plan to look at more deeply for this next month. Right? So choose to live life defined by you and your expectations, not trying to fit into others' expectations. And I have done that. Oh, my gosh, have I done that? In my first two marriages, I did that, and it didn't end well. Right? I'm sure lots of people have relationship stories where they could say where they tried to fit in and fit into what they thought the expectations were of them, and then they had to give up who they were to do that rather than be who they are. And so it ultimately doesn't work. It's unsustainable over time. Some people can sustain it for a really long time, but they're usually pretty miserable in the process. So, be sure to notice the impact of your actions and words. Are they helping you to feel more connected to others? And if they're not, then how could you communicate in a way that would help you feel more connected? And also, you know, moving out of shame, blame, and complain. As sometimes I just tell Peter, I go up to him and I'll say, I just need to vent. So this isn't about you. It's just I need to vent. I need somebody to hear me. And I get it out. And then, you know, I can go to the person that may be causing me distress or whatever and talk to them without doing the shame, blame, and complain piece because I got it out. So there's that. Anyway. And start small and practice belonging to yourself first by being true to yourself whenever you can. Work your way up to being more of your magnificent self. Practicing belonging is courageous living, and we do want to live from the place of courage. And I think that to be in this life does require us to be courageous.
Mm. Beautiful. Wow. That's so powerful. I just so love that you brought all this in, and Brené is so incredible. As you're speaking, a couple of things came up for me. One being that in terms of fitting in, I think it's very obvious, like when we're teenagers or whatever, but as adults, we in terms of focusing our energy on that, it becomes much more subtle and invisible to us, just how much of our attention can be kind of drawn into the fitting in, but not even necessarily what the people around us care about, just what we think they care about.
Right.
Which is often
exactly.
Just completely, like, it's distorted anyway. It's just, it's not even, there's no truth in it. I mean, there's very little truth in it. Okay, so, yeah, sometimes if you're going to just, like, wear, really, really different clothes from everybody else or whatever, like, you're going to feel pretty out of place. But I think that a lot of times, you know, just even in the way we think we should think, or, you know, I think, right? Like, if we identify as being spiritual people, that honestly can carry some of the deepest patterns of dysfunction on the level of, like, fitting into that paradigm, right? Like, what does it mean to be spiritual? Like, Kaylin, you're not supposed to vent. Like, that's not spiritual. Aren't you a spiritual person? Seriously, like, being true to yourself. And, like, and that, right, like, we have this idea of if I am this or that. But, so I love this so much. And I also think the other thing that comes to mind for me is, at least where I've been really, really looking at this pretty deeply, like, in terms of being courageous and vulnerable, I've noticed that some of it, for where the way I was raised, being emotionally vulnerable is really important in the culture I was raised in. It's something I think a lot of us are working on. I actually see that as part of why I'm in Missouri, because where I am now, the leading edge people and communities around me, it feels, you know, every landscape has its brilliance. And here it's really about emotional authenticity. And it's really, really beautiful and powerful. And what I love about what Brené Brown is saying, what you're saying, Kaylin, as well, is that it also extends beyond the one-on-one, I can be emotionally vulnerable with you. It also has to do with being vulnerable enough to step outside your circle of comfort and, you know, do things to actually, sometimes it involves being ambitious, which the way I was raised, that's actually not seen as being like this vulnerable feminine thing.
Yeah.
But it can be, you know, if you have big dreams and you're courageous enough to put yourself out there and risk looking foolish or being rejected, that to me, that's a very different feeling of vulnerability that might venture more into the non-traditional feminine. You know, the traditional feminine woman is very comfortable with emotion and feeling and being vulnerable and and so a lot of us as women are learning to recover that because we've as in a patriarchal culture, we've all lost contact with feeling and emotion, and we really need to honor and value that in ourselves and others. And in addition to that, it still does continue to be essential to honor maybe the more action-oriented vulnerability, which is being courageous enough to develop ourselves and put ourselves out there and take risks and dream big and all those things also. It's a different form of vulnerability that's equally important, I think.
You're reminding me of two things. One is that one of the things that Brené Brown says is you will fail.
Right.
Right, at doing this or whatever you might decide to take on. So you will fail, and that's okay because you have to have the courage to do that, right? And then the second thing is that if this is a Gemini statement, it's kind of like a crazy wisdom statement. It's a quote. I'm not remembering exactly where it comes from at the moment, but it just totally connects in with this fitting in and belonging thing. And it is that I am not who I think I am, and I am not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am.
I love that one. I thought of that immediately as soon as I was talking about that.
Right? So who I think you think I am may not have anything to do with who you think I am at all.
Right.
Right? And then we're trying to fit in because we're trying to fit into what we think somebody thinks about us, and that's not necessarily even true. And also, then we're not being authentic, or we're not being our true selves, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
Right. Oof. So funny. So, okay. So then I love all of that so much. Okay, so some of the blocks that we might encounter around the root chakra could include a desire to fit in, as we've been exploring, and that desire is so strong it causes us to abandon ourselves or to cut off pieces of ourselves. You know, I'll never forget the first time I started studying with Robert Moss and doing my other work, which is active dreaming. I was there for a week in this intensive healing workshop. I paid more than I'd ever paid for a workshop before. I was in Hawaii. It was amazing. But I couldn't remember any of my dreams. And finally, the last night, I asked the question. We were doing dream incubation. We were asking for guidance in our dreams. And I said, how can I keep this magic and, you know, this beauty and magic that I've lived for this week in this field of collective dreaming? How can I bring that into my ordinary life? And that night, I had one fragment of a dream that has stayed with me, and then the mantra or the insight that came from it, which was, I heard a voice that said, cut off your fingers, and it was telling me to cut off two of my fingers. And when I work with Robert around this dream, what he helped me get to, because in the work we find mantras, healing mantras from the dream, was, I will no longer dismember myself in order to fit into ordinary reality. And it really, you know, that I can go back to that, and I forget that, you know, we forget it, but it's so visceral, you know, because he was like, well, what voice does that come from? So, so self, you know, dismembering, we dismember ourselves. We cut off this limb or we cut off that part, and it's so painful and it's so sad. So let's not do that anymore.
Right on.
Yeah, it's so tragic when we see other people that we love do it also. So going into survival or fight or flight mode in times of conflict, relationship conflict is also a big thing we might find ourselves doing. And, you know, I know some people tend to go more into conflict. Some people tend to collapse more. I definitely have seen myself do both. It's hard to find that that edge between really showing up and being fully present and not collapsing and claiming, you know, you're part of something and yet not taking on all of it. That's something I really struggle with. So again, be courageous enough perhaps this month to, if you veer on one side of that spectrum, to explore, you know, maybe the other dynamic, or, you know, getting more nuanced in how it is that you relate to relationship conflicts. But also be aware that this is what's up over the month. So if you have issues that come up around it, it's just coming up for you to be more conscious of and for you to heal. So adrenal exhaustion or burnout or due to overgiving in relationships without sufficient return, it can be so hard. When you, again, are just like giving and giving. And, you know, one of the examples I was giving to my friend recently who is dealing with this is, you know, just consider, just do a practice. If you're in a relationship where it's just way too far over in the direction of the other person, just do a practice where you ask yourself, how much of my thoughts, how much of my attention is actually on myself and my priorities and what I'm responsible for, and how much of my thought in my daily life is focused around this other person. And that can be really important to just look at it that way in a neutral sense, as well as, you know, am I overgiving? But also, is my focus all over there? Lack of boundaries and taking on the other's stuff and then isolating. I think this happens a lot for empaths, and I think it also happens a lot for people with strong Libra in their charts because they are such givers that they can tend to want to connect so much that it might be that you are really, again, not taking care of your own needs. And you might be kind of absorbing or taking on the other person's stuff, and then it gets so hard that you really need more time to yourself, and it can be a very painful dance, you know, between feeling like either you have to just endlessly give or be completely alone and isolated. Because the truth is we all want both. We all want, we all want time alone, and we all want deep, intimate connections with others. But the sad thing about this scenario is that we have neither.
Right on. So now, slide 21, we're going to look at the questions for Libra at the root chakra. It kind of covers some of the things we've already been covering, but maybe in like a more of a summary way. So, and these would be great to journal around, to ask mm-hmm. more deeply any of the ones that feel most alive for you to look at. Like, what would it take for me to release all imbalances in my relational life, including giving my all to any relationship without an equitable return, being codependent, giving up who I am to be in relationship, settling for relationships where we do not meet each other in the ways we need to be met, loved, and valued, and where am I addicted to relationship or so shut down I'm not allowing relationship into my life? So basically, if you're addicted to relationship, you're probably doing the above, you know, giving up who you are to be in it, you know, to be codependent, to not necessarily have an equitable return, to not be met, to not be really loved and valued for who you are. And one of the things I so appreciate about the relationship I have with Peter is that he totally loves me for who I am and not who he wants me to be. And I get to do the same for him. And really, that's what a collaborative, co-creative, fun relationship is about. It's not like trying to have somebody be who they're not. Love them for who they are, and so you can show up with that. But if you're addicted to relationship, you might give up those things just to have a relationship. Yep. But on the other hand, you might be so shut down that you're not allowing relationship into your life because you just don't want to go there. And that can be understandable too. So just, you know, noticing where you're at with that.
Wow, yeah. Well, I think too, you know, for any of you who, out there who are single, it seems so clear that we do bring our issues to the relationship. So that's half of it. But also, honestly, it feels to me like it can be so natural for us at certain stages in our lives to want to be in partnerships with people who simply we're not compatible with.
Yes.
I mean, that's a thing. It's a big thing. And so if you are in a place where you're choosing, just consider that, you know, be choosy. Be really choosy, you know, and, you know, ask spirit, you know, divine to support you in finding a person who's actually a good match. So anyway, so yeah. Home play, so the part of the home play is to do the exercise, the questions, of course, and also to go through some of those practices that Kaylin shared in the Brené Brown work, which is so powerful around fitting in. And then here's another one that just really came to me, which is this. Okay, so hopefully this will make sense. I love this quote. Boundaries are the distance at which I can love you and me simultaneously. because, you know, the truth is that we are here to love, we are here to connect, we are here to be vulnerable, and we're also here to be sovereign beings. And, you know, it's just doing an exercise where you put your hands, you put your arms out to either side, then you put them above your head, and then you put them behind you, and you imagine, you know, that width, arms width, beneath you, and that width is the space that you need around you, and most of us, we're all different, but generally that's the space that each of us kind of needs around us to really inhabit. We take up all that space. So I know for myself that recently I've been activating a certain part of me. I got back a soul self, a part of my soul, that is the part that kind of had believed that I had to resign myself to that I would need to do what other people wanted from me instead of what I wanted to do. And so when I got that part back, she's pretty damn sassy, and she's kind of a little challenging. When we get parts of ourselves back like that, it can be a little difficult. But what I began to notice was that I have an instinctual or energetic reaction to people around me, and maybe that's people in my physical environment, and maybe it's people I'm connecting with, you know, at a distance, but that I was trying to pause enough to say, well, do I really want to spend time with this person, or am I in the place to do that now? You know, do I really, or am I getting a sense of aversion, or I kind of want to push this person away? And, you know, sometimes we have to do more work to see why that is, but sometimes it's simply we're not in that place where we want to connect. So if we've really been entrained to respond immediately to other people's needs, which as women, most of us have, and perhaps the two men in this course, I would imagine, have also had that experience, then it can be really useful in a more detached way to just kind of pause when you're engaging with other people or thinking about whether you're going to see someone or do something with someone, and really tune in and say, well, does my body like that feeling? Does it relax or does it contract? You know, how am I experiencing that? And don't judge yourself, but then pay attention to your outer physical verbal response to that person. So do you have something clenching in your body when you think about visiting this friend, but you think, oh, I really should do that? And so you reach out anyway, or when they reach out to you, you say yes. So just, you know, see how often you do that. Sometimes it's necessary to do that, but see how often you do that kind of thing, and you're kind of lying in a way. If you keep doing that, it's kind of hiding in mind's a strong word, but you're not matched. So, because you're acting as if you want something you don't really want. And so then the first day you do that, and then the second day, do the same thing, pay attention, but then consciously make a different choice. And that could be one of two or more things. The first choice might be to actually just acknowledge more deeply, okay, I really don't want to see this friend. I'm going to acknowledge that. I'm going to be honest about that with myself, because there's nothing wrong with me for not wanting that. And then you can make a choice. You can either choose to go with your gut instinctive reaction, or you can consciously choose, if you're going to see this person, that you're going to do so. And, you know, you're going to really claim that choice to see that person, to do that thing. But the point is, or you can choose to connect. You can choose to actually not do that thing because you don't want to, and see how often you can actually, in a loving way, follow your instincts and what you really want in the way that you interact with other people. So the question might be, what would it take to set boundaries from a place of emotional honesty and love for self as well as other?
Beautiful. I think we're ready to journey.
Yep, I think so too.
So, from the journey perspective, if you have your Venus journal handy or something you can write on, that's always good. Just these are the reminders we do every time before we jump into the journey. And to remember not to listen to this if you're driving or doing anything that requires your full attention, because, you know, we want everybody to be safe. And also, ideally, be in a place where you're comfortable and you won't be interrupted. And, you know, again, this is doing what works for you in the journey. So if you want to lie down or you want to sit back or, you know, however it works for you, if you want to, you know, stand up and move and sway, whatever works for you. So now the other thing is that when we complete both of these ceremonies, we will go right into the Q&A. So you may want to jot down any insights you can come just quick note so you can come back to it later. Of course, those listening to the replay can always pause the recording and the journeys and take all the time that you need to write it down before turning it back on. So there you go. So now I'm just going to invite everybody to connect with your breath. Breathing deeply into your root chakra. Imagine your breath is calming and strengthening your overall life force. And now imagine your personal grandmother guide or guides, as well as all your allies, guardian angels, master teachers, and spirit guides, journeying with you as you step through the light portal now appearing before you. Stepping through the portal, you instantly arrive on the Venus temple steps in front of the huge temple doors and are immediately welcomed by a wise and beautiful grandmother who lovingly clears your energy field with ceremonial sage and her special red tail hawk feather fan. And during the smudging process, you feel any tension, stress, worry, distractions, and or distortions you've been carrying transformed through this smudging ceremony. When the smudging is complete, you are directed to pass through the temple doors into the temple courtyard and then pass by the temple fountain on your way to the Venus altar where you join your Venus sisters and brothers at the Venus altar. And you notice that this sacred space continues to grow in strength, power and beauty, and you notice the Venus altar has many bright red stones, orbs, and pillars, including rubies, garnets, red sandstone, red granite, red coral, cinnabar, red agate, carnelian, and more glowing and vibrant stones with an etheric radiant red light spreading out to surround and illuminate each and every one gathered at the altar. And now the grandmothers arrive in the circle, singing in sacred space, inviting the directions, the above and the below, the within and the without, and our place of center that exists within all life. As the directions are brought in, you now notice a vital, beautiful goddess adorned in red garments appears before you. She lovingly gazes deeply into your eyes, and you feel her powerful presence already dissolving any blocks you have around your own life force energy. In her energy and presence, you feel renewed and ready to transform all the lower vibrational energies that have prevented you from feeling the bliss of totally accessing your magnificent life force. The goddess before you asks you if you are ready to surrender all your fear and uncertainty, insecurity, and lack of trust. She reminds you to be aware that even if you don't know how to surrender, that simply being willing is enough to begin liberating space within you and empowering your root chakra. Stepping closer, this vibrant goddess says to you, "Beloved one, know you are so loved, far beyond your ability to even begin to imagine. Know you are valued and cherished. Know your greatest purpose is to love who you are and to be kind to yourself and others. Know that you are a gift to this life. No matter what you have felt or been told, you belong here in ways you haven't fully understood. You are important and your presence is a treasure that cannot be measured by your external reality. It is an inside job, a practice, that comes from being willing to know the most important relationship you have is first with yourself and then with others. If you need assistance in letting go of whatever has prevented you from knowing how precious you are, ask for my support as I am always available to support you, but only if you ask. Thank you for your courage, your willingness to be brave, your vulnerability, your willingness to be who you truly are. And remember, you are loved. Blessed be. Now the goddess motions to the altar and invites you to receive a message. Perhaps it's a symbol or a word or a phrase that will help guide you through the root chakra Venus gate, depending on your understanding of where you may still be holding on to doubt, uncertainty, judgment, or fear of survival, fear of being accepted, fear of making a mistake. She asks you if you're willing to give to her whatever remaining blocks you have so you can transform them and help you free yourself of the burdens you may have felt as a result. The goddess asks you, if your fears were not holding you back, what would you have the courage to do now? Are you willing to let go and trust this journey? Trust this release process, this process of dying to who you have been so you can be more fully who you are. Gazing upon the Venus altar, notice what captures your attention and know it is a talisman for you to connect with during this Venus gate. Are you willing to share this message with our Venus circle? So now it is time to express your heartfelt thanks to this beautiful relational goddess. And when you are complete, return to the temple steps in preparation for the Sky Temple ceremony.
And now once again, from the steps of the Venus Temple, you look up to see the winding path leading into the deep forest. You follow this path, surrounded by these great and beautiful ancient trees. And as you walk, the already dark forest continues to darken until you can barely see the path in front of you. Suddenly, once again, the ball of light appears before you, lighting the path and leading you to a clearing under what is now the dark, starlit night sky. And as you step into the clearing, you find yourself once again before the deep pool of water with lotus blossoms blooming along the edges. And once again, in the pool's smooth, dark surface, you see the reflection of fireflies. And you smell the scent of jasmine, and you hear the sound of night birds and of an owl. And then once again, you see the glowing spiral staircase ascending far up into the heavens until it disappears into the clouds, into the Sky Temple. And so you approach and ascend the spiraling staircase and pass through the mist and fog and emerge to find yourself once again on solid ground. You have returned to the Sky Temple. And now you see the many stone structures consecrating the marriage between earth and sky. You see the pyramids, kivas, medicine wheels, observatories, stone circles, and petroglyphs, all the hierophanies aligned with the cycles of the sun, the moon, the stars, and the planets. And again, it feels to you as if you were to put your hand up into the sky, that you could touch the stars, that you could touch the planets. This is how intimate and how close they feel to you. Once again, you see before you two pillars with Venus shining so beautifully near the crescent moon. And above them, you see the brilliant blue Pleiadian star cluster shining like a many-faceted gem in the night sky, pulsing and vibrating. And now you see a path of blue light streaming from the brightest star, Alcyone. It extends down towards you, creating a path for you to travel through the sky to the Pleiadian star system. You feel your heart quicken with a sense of anticipation and longing, a feeling of going home. You joyfully take the sapphire blue road through the sky until you come upon a gate made of shimmering stone filled with light. There is a lock upon the door, and for a moment, a rush of sadness comes over you. Can it be that you would be barred from returning to this place where a part of your star soul feels so welcomed and so cherished? Suddenly, you discover a weight in your pocket and find that you have been carrying a silver key with a strange emblem. It is blazing with pure white light. You put the key in the lock and it fits perfectly. You open the door and step into a spacious room. You see within this room a circle of women whose bodies are filled with light. They are radiant, and you can feel the love emanating from their eyes and from their very essence. One of these women steps forward, inviting you to sit in the center. At the center of the circle, you look around, and within the faces of these women, you see glimpses of women you know,
women you love. They embody the truest light of each of these women. And you realize you too are emanating this pure love light of your truest essence and beauty. They are honoring you. They speak your name with so much love, with so much honor. Words of praise and comfort and affirmation, truly honoring the courageous journey that you are on to express your deepest soul self. You feel these affirmations showered at you from every direction. You feel such a deep and profound sense of connectedness, of belonging, of home within your body, within this circle. And most of all, you have the experience of being fully seen. A woman comes up to you bearing a gift. You know this gift captures the essence of who you truly are, and you are to bring it back with you as a touchstone so you do not forget. And so now she opens her hands, and you see this gift. Take a moment to take this gift in so you will remember it. Take the gift and put it in your pocket with gratitude. And now it is time for you to take leave of the Pleiadian home that your star soul has known to be a part of you and will always be a part of you and to which you can always return. And it is now time for you to once again to descend the path of blue sapphire light and to descend back down to the sky temple and back down the spiral staircase, back down, down into your body and back down into the room where you've begun. And so now just take a moment to capture through words or through images any of the messages, any of the gifts, any of the insight that feels most essential for you that you received at the Venus Temple or in the Sky Temple journey.
So we're going to go ahead and start the Q&A. So if you have anything you want to say, insights, sharing, questions, anything that didn't make sense, Demi and I were sharing, anything that you want to share, press star 6, and then I think it might ask you to press 1 or something after that. They'll put you in the queue. And we have a few minutes, so... Yay for us. We did it this time, Tammy.
Yes, we did. We did it before. Yay, good for us.
Right? Okay, so it looks like, This is Lace, right, Lace?
Yeah. Hi, you two. Love hearing all your laughter. It's always delightful. I just have a little interesting thing I wanted to share with the whole group as we come into the root chakra. At this point in my life, and some of the others in our group may experience that, my actual family of origin has dwindled down to pretty much my sister and I. And it's just so amazing, as you both bring out so often and others in the group on Facebook, how, you know, we align our life experiences, you know, start changing with the certain gates. And I find, as a few have mentioned, that it tends to go ahead of things. Like this gate is coming on the first. But to make a long story short, which I never probably do, but I'm going to try, I've been on 23andMe for a while for some health reasons. And out of nowhere, several people contacted me with very, very close DNA matches, and one in particular that we connected with, it ends up her grandmother was my grandmother's maternal grandmother's sister, and that's pretty close.
Wow.
Yeah. So her grandmother was my mother's aunt. And she knew her grandmother much more than I did, knew mine, and you know, just sharing that she never knew there was us, that she even had a sister. But it's just, I'm just so thrilled, because coming into this root chakra, And especially with the Meta Goddess being Libra relationships, all of a sudden, you know, this whole new world, you know, I'm in my mid-60s, this whole new world of some really cool relatives, you know, people where I feel I belong. And she's sharing, she's been researching a lot of things. So here I thought we were a bunch of farmers. We're actually spies. My Polish relatives lived in France and were part of the Polish resistance working with the French resistance, you know, against Hitler. And it's giving me a whole, you know, new sense of who I am. And I've been asking, you know, I've been trying to heal my female lineage. And this is through, you know, my mother, through my maternal side. So I'm just so excited. And she's an amazing woman. She's a surgical nurse that quit to go to Africa and Romania to help children with AIDS. She loves everything I love, you know, and so we're feeling how, even though we didn't know one another, and right this week as we met, her husband had a heart attack and she doesn't think he's going to make it, and her daughter's getting married, and she said, you know what, you came into my life right when I'm in a position where my family's kind of leaving me.
Wow.
And it's just been amazing. So I don't know if that works for anybody, but, you know, if anybody's feeling alone or, you know, many of us have let go of friends or family members, you know, that we don't want in our lives in the last few years. And it's just such a whole new sense of belonging that I never really thought I needed or didn't even think existed. And here's this whole tribe all over the world. And we may, you know, if I can ever get on my feet, literally, you know, we want to go to Gdańsk, Poland, where most of our relatives are from. And anyway, I just think it's so amazing as we go into this. I just feel a strengthening of my root, you know, and pride from where I came from that I never had before.
That is so cool, Chase. Thank you, Lace. Thank you for thank you for sharing that with us. I hope that inspires other people. I've done 23andMe myself, and I have not really connected in the same way you have, but it's interesting to know, to see other people out there that are DNA matches, and I haven't quite found anybody that's as close to the family line as what you're talking about. But
yeah, and I didn't look. Yeah. She, you know,
she found you,
started messaging me. But now that she messaged me, now there's another person that his grandpa was my grandmother's brother, and he seems like an amazing man. He's a journalist, and he lives in Atlanta now. And he told us both that he's hiring a crew of boots on the ground in Europe to try to find documents and papers. So he's got the money and the desire. And I don't know. I just feel like my family is almost being, and you both know my sacral plate fractured in half during the last descent of the root chakra. Well, 2 years ago, and I feel like, you know, maybe it's being put back together from the ancestors up now. It's just, I can't even explain it. It's very interesting.
So
that's
magical.
Amazing.
And the North Node in Cancer, I was thinking, you know, the North Node in Cancer. It's like all of a sudden, you know, family is appearing.
You know, that is so cool. I really do still, I'm kind of obsessed with it, of course, but I really do think that the Capricorn convergence of Saturn, Pluto, and South Node also is like bringing us back to our roots and doing ancestral healing work. It's just so powerful.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Wow. And, of course, the North Node is in Cancer, too, because then we can create new ways of being in family relationship. So,
and you know where the North Node in Cancer is? My ninth house. And so it's all these foreign people.
Wow.
And my learning about, you know, my real heritage and my cancers in my bone marrow, the deepest part of my DNA.
Whoa.
And I think it needs healing, you know.
Wow.
Yes.
It's just, you know, so magical.
I love the
so
magic.
Thank you. I love
that's
the magic.
That's so powerful.
Thank you for sharing that, Lisa. I love it.
Yes. Yes, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, so I encourage anybody. You know, I'm running into a lot of people my age who have lost a lot of family and feel alone. And, you know, that might be, if they're curious about family of origin, which to me a lot of the root chakra is, it might be a possibility of, you know, finding some foundation for them. So that's why I wanted to bring it up too.
Awesome. You know, I'll just say, too, that we do have the Death by Intent gate next, and that also corresponds to the Earth Star Chakra, which can also have to do with these energies. So we've got a couple months, you know,
oh,
from
good.
The perspective of Venus to do this deeper work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Leith. Really appreciate that sharing.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's no one else in the queue at the moment. We're kind of at our time, unless somebody wants to pop in really quick. We might be complete. Yeah, well, looks like we are. So, okay. So we will meet next month. I hope everyone has a fabulous root chakra clearing, releasing, letting go.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And
right?
Just deep grounding in all of your relationships, especially with yourself.
Especially with yourself. Yes, beautifully said. So bye, everyone.
Good night.